Hello, and welcome back to Kvikmyndapod, an Icelandic cinema podcast. I'm Rob Watts, and as ever, I'm joined by my good friend Ellie Cawthorn for another journey through the world of Icelandic cinema. This is our sixth series, and we've got loads more great stuff to cover on this go-around. I say it all the time, but for such a small country, there's a huge variety of films, with plenty now being produced every year. So to kick this series off, we've got three films lined up for you, one each from 2022, 2023, and 2024. Get excited! Before we get stuck in, just a quick reminder to come and follow us on social media and join in the conversation. Over on Twitter, or have I got to call it X now? Instagram and Threads, we are at Kvikmyndapod. As ever, that's KvikMyndApod. You can subscribe or follow us wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd absolutely love a positive rating or review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, as that will help us reach more people. Finally, if you're feeling extra generous, we have a Ko-fi page where you can support us if you like what you hear. All our links can be found on Insta, X, and in the show notes. So, this week's delicious offering is Wild Game, or Vitklibrauth, from director Elsa Maria Jakobsdottir. Available to watch via the Ruv website until the 1st of March, I've put the link in the show notes, it centres around a dinner party starring the who's who of Icelandic film and TV, and is certain to make you cringe.
Okay!
We're back!
Welcome to 2024!
Woohoo! Series 6!
I can't believe we've made it through 6 series, that's mad, isn't it? Several different houses, several different, life partners.
Life partners? has it been that long? I don't think so. But it has been a while. And we've been off air for a while as well. It's been quite a busy year. That's why we haven't done anything. Also, you know, we got to spread these Icelandic films around.
Yeah.
We can't just cover everything in one fell swoop. What would we be left with?
We got to spread the butter across several slices of bread, not just one.
Yes. Great analogy. but we are back. I thought we'd just do a quick catch up of where we've been and why we've not been around to actually chat Icelandic films. So 2023, busy year. We did do a series of 6 episodes. And yes, apologies, they were stretched across like 7 months, but we did it. But like, it's such a busy time.
Yeah.
I moved into a new house.
I also moved into a new house, actually.
Yeah, just around the corner, yep. Which is nice. This is the closest we've ever been, isn't yeah. it, really? I went to America for 5 weeks, which I did talk about at one point. Did multiple holidays. We were both at Green Man Festival,
woo,
which was a lot of fun. And then you...
Oh, yeah, I just bailed on life for 3 months, went to Central America and had an absolutely wonderful time. So, yeah there wasn't much recording equipment available.
No, and nor should there have been. Like, yeah. That looked like an epic trip. Just cut yourself off from life, normal life.
Mm, but now I'm back, ready for cold evenings watching Icelandic movies.
Lovely, lovely, lovely.
The tan lines are fading. The blonde hair's, you know, fading to brown. So it's time to get back in and watch the movies.
Yeah. Do you think these films would work in the same way under the sort of Brazilian sun?
No, I think you'd feel quite distant to them.
Yeah. But even more kind of alien.
Yeah.
While you were away, I went to Iceland again.
I know. How was it? Did you have a good time?
Obviously, yes. So I took my partner, Sophie, for the first time. She'd never been. We had a very brief trip. It was sort of 3 whole days. That was it.
Oh, really?
And having been a lot, I thought I'd try and pack in as much.
Did you give her the highlights tour?
I gave her the highlights tour, and blimey, we packed it all in. We really did. We did a morning in Reykjavik. We went to loads of bars. We went to a restaurant for lobster soup. We went to the harbour. We went to the church. We went to the pond. We did all the walking around Reykjavik. Then we got a car. We drove out to the waterfalls. We went to Gullfoss, Geysir. We even managed to go to the Westman Islands, which I've never been to before. So that was super exciting. Mm-hmm. Managed to be there for 2 hours, basically. We did get to see some beluga whales, though.
Oh, wow.
They were in a sanctuary.
Okay.
It was a bit weird, but they were saved from being in like this massive aquarium in China and got moved to Iceland. There's a whole thing. It was on telly. John Bishop helped them move. You know, that Scouse comedian.
What's he got to do with beluga whales?
Or I think Iceland? He just loves animals. Okay. And for some reason, he got chosen as the presenter for this show about moving beluga whales from China to a habitat in Iceland in the Westman Islands where they were going to spend out their days. Mm. Except that it turns out they found it really stressful to live in open water. So they've just been living in this tiny aquarium on the island.
The big wide world is quite scary, to be fair.
It is, yeah. But we got to see the little white and little grey, I think they're called.
They
were very
cute.
Cool. So that was nice. And we drank beers. You remember we did that Christmas episode?
Mm-hmm.
And there was, we talked about how the traditional Icelandic Christmas involved lamb, tinned cabbage, tinned peas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some Icelandic brewery brewed a beer that contains that cabbage and those peas. And they sell it now. It's actually really nice. I had it on the ferry back.
Terrible.
It does sound terrible. Sophie did not want to try it.
Yeah.
But genuinely was quite nice.
Okay.
It's a little bit sweeter than a normal lager.
I think
I
need to try it to believe you there.
Yeah, fair enough. I didn't bring any back, unfortunately. Sorry. But yes, I mean, we basically did everything. Whistle Stop Tour. We went to Sky Lagoon, which was completely sold out because Blue Lagoon had closed because of the volcano in Grindavik, which has been the biggest news.
Is that the same volcano that we see in this film?
I don't think it is, actually, because this film was made prior to November 2023. But there have been so many volcanoes recently erupting that, don't you think, filmmakers have been like super lucky in a sense that they were able to get all this amazing footage and use it in their films for various reasons. Not so lucky, obviously, for the people of Grindavik. And it's recently erupted again. And it's actually taken out some houses now, which is sad. But we were lucky we didn't have to go anywhere near Grindavik, but it did mean the Blue Lagoon was closed. So all those tourists were in our lagoon instead. But it was still very good. Anyway, I'll stop talking about my trip, but needless to say, it was brilliant. And we saw the Northern Lights from the plane, which is something I've always wanted to see. And it's just as special as you'd hope. So,
well, a lovely little picture postcard you've painted for us there. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all right. Moving on, in this break, there's been a lot of sort of Iceland on TV or just things popping up in various stuff. So I thought I'd do a quick catch up. Olafur Darri Olafsson, you know, big name in and out of Iceland. He pops up as the narrator in a new BBC drama.
Which one's that?
The Boat Story.
I've watched the first 10 minutes of this and I was been told I need to continue.
It's pretty fun. It's quite dark and quite funny. I would say it probably didn't need to be 6 episodes.
I could imagine him to have an amazing voiceover voice.
Yes, he does. It's weird because it's sort of Icelandic but sort of American, but also very just like
deep
the most
and
deep and robust. Yeah. He's very good. So that was exciting. Also, a girl that I met at university is in that series as well.
Mm.
So that was a surprise. Also, Murder at the End of the World. It aired on Disney Plus. It's a sort of murder mystery set at a hotel in Iceland. Written by Britt Marling and Zal Batmanglij, who did The OA, if you ever saw that.
Yes!
Which is one of my favourite programmes ever.
The most bizarre TV show.
Yeah.
That actually came up in conversation for me yesterday. What is it? It's back in the ether. It's floating around.
The OA is quite hard to forget, I think. But they've written this murder mystery set in a billionaire tech entrepreneur's private hotel in the middle of nowhere in Iceland. So that was quite cool, seeing sort of North Iceland, just really remote, these people trapped in a hotel. It's like classic kind of Agatha Christie style thing with flashbacks. Because our main character is like a hacker, I think. An internet hacker. I sound like a really old man
now.
Yeah,
all right, boomer.
Yeah. So there's lots of kind of modern ways into this old school murder mystery, which is very cool. And Iceland plays a big part. And as we're recording, True Detective Season 4 has just dropped, subtitled Night Country, which has all been shot in Iceland. Mm-hmm. But it's actually set in Alaska. So I haven't seen that yet. And finally, some music. Obviously, there's tons and tons of music coming out of Iceland. But I stumbled across this thing called Eyðibýli, which is an album by Gunnar Ingi Guðmundsson. Now, that title means abandoned farm in Icelandic. And I was like, oh, this is cool. It's like the most cinematic sounding, like, orchestral piece I'd ever heard. I was like, wow. And I couldn't figure out what it was. Was it like the theme tune to a new series? Or at one point, I thought it was a documentary series about abandoned farms. Like, that's very cool, but the most epic intro. It turns out it's the title of an album, title track of an album, of just this amazing kind of orchestral cinematic music. Ooh. And it's really worth checking out.
Okay, I will do.
So there's some music recommendation as well. And before we get into the film, we just wanted to do a quick shout out to some of our listeners. Because we do have listeners.
Believe it or not.
So in that break, while you were off gallivanting in South and Central America, I met up with Leanne, who has been a big supporter of this podcast. So that was really, really nice to see her and learn about her most recent trips to Iceland. And, you know, I got to wax lyrical about my trip as well. So whenever I get the opportunity, I will do that. So just be thankful I didn't ramble on for too long. We also got sent some amazing photos of a cycle trip around the ring road of Iceland from one of our listeners, Jessie, which is very cool to see. It would be cool to cycle around Iceland,
amazing.
Don't you think?
I'd love to do that.
I don't know if I'd actually have the...
ability.
The ability. I can ride a bike. I'm just not sure if I'd have the energy or the fitness for it. But, you know, the photos...
Got to get training.
Okay, fine. We're going next year, sorted. But it looked amazing, and I'm very jealous of that trip. Also, shout out to Kieran, who has been compiling over the last few years this draft Wikipedia page for our podcast.
Amazing.
It looks so good when you look at the list of all the episodes. It's like, how have we done so much? So I've got my fingers crossed that one day we'll be big enough for that to actually get published on the internet. But big thanks to Kieran for, you know, compiling all our stuff better than I could. And finally, another thank you to Cookie400 on Instagram, who pointed out that there was some stuff worth watching on the Roov website. Mm. Now, I've spoken about Roov before. It's the public broadcaster in Iceland. And they basically, I mean, they're essentially the BBC, but they have a streaming service of sorts on their website. And at time of recording, they've got loads of stuff on there, specifically with English subtitles. So last year I watched this TV series called After Elding. In English, they called it Balls, which was about this handball team starring Ingvar himself, which is really, really good. And that's still up there. But also over Christmas, they aired some very recent Icelandic films.
Which has been very handy for us.
So handy. And it's such a great place to catch these things that don't air in the UK. So we're kicking off this series with two films from the Roov website, which haven't been released here, but may one day, I don't know, but we do have the ability to watch them. And I've been telling people on social media that they're there and putting the links up. So hopefully... we're not the only two people in England the UK who've watched these films. The first one, which we're going to talk about today, is Vitlibrauth, Wild Game. And the other one is A Letter from Helga, which we'll talk about next week. So thank you to Cookie400 for this, because what a way to start the first episode.
Yeah, it's in with a bang rather than out with a bang.
Certainly. So let's get chatting.
I'm going to say Eglos!
Eglos!
Akkur Matti minn að senda þér skilaboð?
Ég bara veit ekki. Ég að taka sem minn?
Hey. Ég er mér leik. Símon og borðið. Og meðan við borðum, þá lesum við upp átt öll skilaboð, ítum og spíkar þegar einhver hringir, og skoðum allar myndir. dáið líka með þeim.
Hann blind fugl hérna.
Það ekki að svara hann?
Nei.
Rússnesk rúletta líka leikur, Björg.
Ekki lagi með því.
Þú segir Leifur, nú veður þú niður á mig og étur mig eins og pítsu. Niður, Leifur, pizza og ekki orð.
Jöp, sko.
Þú sem nærbúrstna laus á fundin til að höstu ykkert kúnna.
Bara að.
Þú, ættu fara heim.
Stopp, ekki snerta símuna.
Þau erum að skipta eftir á símuna.
Nei, hei.
Bling. Þetta er mér.
Right then, Vitlibrauf, Wild Game.
I loved this film.
Yes, I'm so glad. I thought this would be the perfect film to start the series because of exactly what it is. Before we jump into everything, give me your kind of first thoughts about it.
So I really enjoyed this in a way that made me feel uncomfortable. It had a slight kind of nasty streak running through it,
yeah,
which I don't usually like in films, but I think when films are about dinner parties of like slightly up themselves, middle class, middle-aged people, who then I'm fine for a little streak of nastiness, because yeah, I think it kind of really pokes fun at that kind of, it's a very keeping up with the Joneses, right? And this idea of like everybody's trying to one up their friends, and actually underneath it all there's this seething hotbed of lies and secrets.
Yeah.
It is not the way I want to view the world as actually being, but it is very entertaining.
Entertaining, funny, dark. It's like, it's just the perfect way to start the series. I think it's entertainment.
It's such a classic premise, isn't it? This dinner party gone bad. I mean, it's been used quite a lot. So I thought immediately of the play God of Carnage, which I think was adapted into a film.
I think that was Roman Polanski starring Kate Winslet. And yes, cringe as fuck. But then, yeah, in horror as well, it's used really effectively. Karen Kusama's The Invitation is probably the standout kind of awkward, cringe, what is going on? And then really dark dinner party scene. There's a comedy starring Ben from Parks and Recreation and Jason Schwartzman.
Yes.
And it's basically about these two couples who get together for a dinner party. And it just is...
It unravels.
It is hilarious, but like not laugh out loud hilarious, like properly...
Claw
Skin
your own eyes
crawling.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something, isn't there, about these plays and films set around dinner parties that is usually cringe. I think it's because rather than, as you say, like slapstick or anything else, I think quite often because they're usually about like social mores and people kind of putting on a show and then being brought down a peg.
Yeah, it's usually, and secrets. There's always secrets. And that's exactly what this film is. And that's exactly how I thought about this film. And I don't know whether, should I start with the synopsis? I mean, you've basically done it, but I'll put it into a little bit of context. So yeah, like you said, we're at a dinner party in a fancy neighborhood in Reykjavik. We're in Vesturbæjar,
which very is fancy.
The most expensive district in Reykjavik, where seven friends gather for food, drink, and secrets. Yeah, so we've got three couples and one solo guest. And so the plot of this film revolves around this game that they play where they put their phones on the table and they basically say, whatever happens, as if a message comes through, if a call comes through, we're all going to read it, we're all going to listen to it. Because if we've all got nothing to hide, then no one should be worried. And, you know, we're all friends, we should all know about each other.
Two thoughts here.
Yep.
As soon as this happened. One, worst idea ever.
Yeah.
Two, because largely, if I did that, it would be so boring. It would be basically like your mum saying, what was the measurements of the thing you needed again, or like, oh, the plasterer saying, I'll get a quote to you by the end of the weekend. There wouldn't be people, you know, sexting and dishing out all these dirty secrets. Really, these people have got a lot going on.
That's what you want people to think, though, isn't it? That's what everyone wants people to think. As soon as that phone is on the table, it's a different story. It's not just thumbs up from dad.
Honestly, I know you have to suspend belief. Suspend disbelief, sorry. A little bit, I think, for this movie to believe that all of these secrets would come out in such an obvious way.
100%. But that's the fun of it, isn't it?
That's the fun of it, yes.
It's interesting because this is a film, this is like something like the 24th adaptation of an Italian film called Perfect Strangers.
I mean, it's a, as we said, it's a classic concept, but I would love actually to see some of those different films. So they're all adapted for different languages and different global audiences.
Exactly. And so there's a quote here from the director of the Icelandic version, Elsa Maria Jakobsdottir. She said, "Our aim with this film is to entertain the Icelandic audience. Nothing needs to be translated. You don't have to worry that nobody outside of this culture is going to understand it." Now, that kind of explains why we're not getting it in the UK, if it's made specifically for the Icelandic market. And obviously, if it's this idea has been translated into all these different languages for different cultures, they're to some degree specific to each nation or whatever. We haven't had a British version. There hasn't been an American version or an Australian version at this point, which I think is really interesting. Oh, that reminds me. I did watch the Australian version of Rams.
Oh, any good?
Very good. Okay. And also very clever in the way that they flip things from the Icelandic.
Australian, not New Zealand.
Yeah, it is Australian, but they do just make such a good kind of, obviously it's not cold in Australia, so the way they flip things is very, very clever. I watched it on Channel 4. It might still be streaming there, so worth checking out. Anyway, back to Wild Game. Did you think, this is my question to think about as we talk, how specific was this to Icelandic culture? Not that you would necessarily know, but but like, how accessible was it from an English point of view?
I thought it was really accessible, but I did have fun thinking, okay, if there was an English version of this, what would it look like? Because there were certain references. So for example, one of the characters, Björg, was, you know, called a quota queen, and this idea was that basically her family, she was an heiress, essentially. Her family was rich, but you wouldn't know it, but she had loads of money.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was said, oh, her family have this fishing quota that means they're really rich. And clearly, that came with some kind of cultural baggage.
Yes.
That it, she wasn't respected necessarily for that. It wasn't seen as something kind of cool. It was seen as maybe something a bit trashy, or, like, new money, in quote marks. And she was also portrayed as kind of, like, you know, floaty yoga, woo-woo kind of character. And I wondered if this was in the UK, maybe you would get one of those kind of floaty yoga woo-woo characters, or maybe it would be a kind of...
She'd be an Alexa trashy Chung type, wouldn't she?
I don't know. Or would she be like, you know, hair extensions and fake tan?
What, like a TOWIE?
Or
a Made in Chelsea?
Like, yeah, like a Gemma Collins. Not Gemma Collins, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, so I'd be intrigued to see if somebody does do an adaptation, some of those little differences.
Yeah, it's interesting. And we'll go through all the characters in just a second. But that one specifically, yes, we probably do in this country have fishing quotas and all of that. But it's not an ingrained thing in our society that we would all...
It's not a trope.
It's not something we would necessarily think about at all. Whereas obviously it's quite ingrained in Icelandic society. But that doesn't stop us from understanding the context.
Yeah.
Like, we know what they mean. We know why they're having a go.
I think it's the same as, so Rúna, who's hosting this like pretentious seven-course dinner, he's like, oh, here's some fancy reindeer balls. I shot the reindeer myself. Which obviously in the UK, you probably wouldn't have that. But the equivalent would be him saying, you know, like, oh, it's an Ottolenghi recipe with za'atar that I got when I went to the Middle East.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You kind of can understand those touch points, even if the touch points would maybe be different.
Yeah, I think it makes it all the more interesting as well. Like, I, obviously, I'd find the British version fascinating. But actually, to see yeah, what specific things have changed in these adaptations? And obviously, this is an Icelandic film podcast, and we've discussed a lot of this kind of contextual stuff in the past, so we probably have a little bit more of an idea, maybe. Mm. But it is fascinating to see the way they do that.
Ilmað með, sko íslensku viltu blóðbergi með konga sveppa fróða. Það ekkert annað sko.
Hvaðan segir þú? Hvaðan?
Já, þeir mitt úr Skoradalum, ég týndi á sjálfu.
Hvað þetta hérna margra rétta?
Þetta sjö rétta hjá okkur.
Nei,
Jú, gerðu svo vel.
Gerðu svo vel, þeir meði bara taka diskana með ykkur inn.
Er ekki nóg að borða bara annað hvern með það?
So you've mentioned Björk and Runa. So Runa and his wife, Ava, they're the ones hosting this dinner party. I'm going to go through the cast list here because this is like Icelandic all-stars.
The cream of the crop.
It really is. So it's hosted by Nina Dögg Filippusdóttir, who's Ava, and she's all over the place in Iceland. Most famous in the UK, probably, for having appeared in Trapped and The Valhalla Murders, both of which were big TV series. And Runa, who obviously we know from 101 Reykjavik, from Lam, played by Hilmir Snær Gudnason. And they are kind of, you mentioned Runa, he's the chef for some reason, but...
But they're the kind of most aspirational, perfect couple from the outside, right? So they've got
I'd say so.
Beautiful house. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's gorgeous, which I felt very jealous about. And this kind of... They're clearly got a lot of money. They're very polished, you know, they're good looking.
Well put together.
They're well put together, exactly. And they're very, you know, I don't know, they're very kind of in command.
Yeah, and I think also their jobs. So she's a therapist, he's a cosmetic surgeon. Like, these are big jobs, aren't they?
Yeah.
Proper jobs. And obviously they're the ones hosting the dinner party as well.
Mm.
And it just feels like they know their place as well. They feel like they know their place.
They're king and queen of this social group, right?
I'd say so. Yeah, everyone sort of looks up to them as the kind of perfect couple. They have a daughter, Briette, who the dynamic there is weird as well. Like, dad, the two of them get on really well. He provides great advice, but she hates her mum. I can imagine that's pretty normal for a 14-year-old girl. But yeah, from the outside, they look like the ones, don't they?
Yeah.
Moving round the table, we've got Hildur and Leifur, played by Anita Briem, who we have seen before in Quake, and we will see again. And Leifur is played by none other than Tolkur from Godland.
Yeah!
Hilmar Gudjonsson. Now, tell me about that couple.
Oh, I found him so insufferable and slimy. So he's presumably, he's an actor, clearly.
An actor, yes.
He's an actor, darling. But doesn't seem to have had much work lately.
No.
She's a mumpreneur. What's the
mumpreneur?
Phrase?
I mean, that's probably a word.
A merman, an entrepreneur. So she's doing the, you know, women can have it all thing.
Because they've got three kids, haven't they?
Being the breadwinner and being this kind of like amazing businesswoman and a mum as well. Great, amazing. But clearly, as things unfold, as with all of these cases, it's not quite what it seems. But she's already, from the opening sequences, sloshing back the vino.
Like, before anyone's had anything, she's already had like two glasses of Prosecco or champagne or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So yeah, they seem... okay, busy, but okay, but they're not. Then moving again around the table, we've got Pieter, who turns up on his own. They think he's going to turn up with his partner, Anna, who they think is some old person. They can't understand why he's always going from girlfriend to girlfriend, but they never really meet them, and they don't know what to expect from the partner. Pieter's played by Gisli Urngardason, who we've not really seen at all. He's in a thing on Netflix called Ragnarok, which looks great, but he is kind of...
a lone wolf.
I was going to say that as well.
Also, that everybody's kind of taking the piss out of him before he arrives.
Yeah, There's I mean, everyone is subject to the banter, but from the start, it's like full on for him.
Yeah. And it's got a slightly nasty streak to it.
Mm-hmm.
He's a bit of an outsider, I'd say.
Yes, and that becomes even clearer as the film goes on, doesn't it?
And also, he, of course, is there on his own at these, like, the coupliest couple events. And I imagine, you know, as you go further on in life, when you get to middle age, a lot of those things do become just sets of couples.
Mm-hmm.
And being that solo person, it's not always the most fun.
No, I did have that for a few years there in my early 30s. It's not nice. Even if you know everyone, it's just still like, oh, I am sort of on the outside. Anyway, moving on to the last couple, as you mentioned, Bjørg and Thorstein. Bjørg, played by Thurður Blær Jóhannsdóttir, who is in the group Reykjavíkurdætur, Daughters of Reykjavík, the Icelandic hip-hop all-girl group, all-female group.
Okay.
They're very cool. And she is the partner, Bjørg is the partner, of Thorstein, played by Björn Hlina Haraldsson.
Who's the younger brother of...
Rúna, that's right, yeah.
So the dynamic here with these two is he's a bit of a loser but thinks he's cool.
Yeah.
Has this younger girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Very PDA.
Just great. But how old do you think she's meant to be?
I reckon sort of...
Early 30s.
I wasn't going to go that high, but yeah, perhaps, because they're all, what, 50?
Maybe late mid-40s. Yeah. Mid-late 40s, she's maybe 30.
Yeah, okay, that sounds about right.
And so there's that kind of power dynamic at play there as well.
Mm-hmm. The age gap thing.
Yeah.
Mm. So yeah, so that's our little cast of characters. And off-screen, they have another friendly couple called Kjartan and Sara. Turns out they've broken up because she's looked at his phone. And thus, the game begins.
Jemilek.
Gunnleik.
Með allt á hreinu, síman á borðið.
Og svo hvað?
Og meðan við borðum, þá lesum við upp átt öll skilaboð, ítum á spíkar þegar einhver hringir og skoðum alla myndir. Hvað, það engin leyndamál að það?
Koma.
Já, nei. Látum kossa. Ég til ég þetta.
So like we said, there's all this banter going on, you know. Pieter's getting it in the neck for having an older partner or whatever. Runa's getting it in the neck for being this terrible cook. Is the food that bad? It looks good.
It looks nice, yeah. Maybe he's, you know, too experimental with his flavour basis.
It does seem that way. The cheese sauce goes in the drain. The meatballs go in the dog's mouth. Like, I don't know.
How bad can a meatball be?
I know, that's what I was thinking. But anyway, they really do lay it on thick with the jokes about his terrible cooking. Even Leifur gets it for being a terrible actor. Not necessarily a terrible actor, but basically a non-actor. And then Thorstein gets it a lot for being this... He's trying to be an entrepreneur, but has failed multiple times.
Yeah.
Which is quite funny.
I did think, you know, even if they weren't taking part in this wild game, that it would have been a pretty brutal dinner party anyway. They seemed, it's that got that sense of, you know, when people have been friends for years and years and years and years, and then there's always somebody that can drag up some old crimes you committed in year 11 or whatever.
Well, that's it. And all the lads have known each other for that long, haven't they, since they were kids. So there's all that stuff ready. And it's funny because the film starts and it's, you get kind of get swept along. Everything is really fast and bustly and they're like,
fun.
Yeah, and fun, and they're all laughing. Like, the laughter is so excessive, especially from Leifur from the beginning. It's just like over the top. Like, they're all scared, especially once the phones go on the table. People's reactions become heightened for sure. But it is, that banter is just, as soon as they step in the door, away we go. And no wonder Pieter has felt like scared to say anything. He's got this major secret.
I'd say that the pace of the film is quite relentless, isn't it? Like, it's building to a crescendo maybe, but it is like galloping a pace.
Yeah. And the only kind of brief respite we get is from the occasional kind of cuts to daily life in Reykjavik, cyclists, swimmers, people driving their cars.
Which I guess is to signify the passage of time, but maybe it is just to give us like a little bit of space as the viewer.
For sure, both of those things, 100%. I don't think we could have followed this film relentlessly for 2 hours without the occasional break.
Yeah. I feel like when the game gets started, it's quite a depressing worldview. It's basically everybody thinks that their partner is having an affair.
I know, yeah.
Or if they don't think they're having an affair, then they are.
It is pretty bad, isn't it? Especially because all the men knew that this other guy, Kjartan, was having an affair and didn't say anything. Why do they? What do they all know? What do they all not know? What do the partners know? Mm. What do they not know? It's a precarious place to start.
Yeah. But I guess when they're all putting their phones on the table, you think, you know, some of these people, it's a very bad idea for them to put their phones on the table. But I guess there's that mutually assured destruction thing. Because if you don't put your phone on the table, you're going to have to explain why.
Why? Yeah. And I think you can see the resistance from certain people from the start, understandably. But because Pieter's just like, I'll do it, it's really hard to then not do it. Once that idea is formed and out there, how do you say no?
Yeah. So I guess, yeah, Pieter jumps in and you'd say he's got one of the biggest secrets. Not that reflects badly on him, but is like a big important deal, which is that he's involved with the captain of the football team he coaches.
I think, yeah, it was a bit tricky. I don't know if it was a translation, but they kept using the term fourth division. He coaches some form of KR football team. Maybe they're reserves, or hard to tell, but he's in a relationship with the captain of the main team.
The male captain. The male most captain. Importantly, yes. When of course nobody knows that he is gay.
Yes.
And so I guess he makes a comment, doesn't he, that I guess maybe he wanted to be found out, or he wanted to have a reason to tell everybody and his hand to be forced almost.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like he says, he uses Leivur's kind of Norwegian serial killer analogy of like, he wanted to be found out. Like, this is his way to tell everyone. And it makes sense. It's just a situation that's impossible to hide from.
Mm.
So, yeah, I kind of in my mind, that's a good way to reveal a secret that you can't specifically say out loud.
But some of the other secrets, I think it's quite risky to have put your phone on the table. Like, what are you doing? It's clearly going to go wrong.
Yeah.
You're getting Snapchats from other women, young-looking women, getting, you know, people that you've had affairs with are having babies.
Oh, my God, no. I mean, it's a lot. I mean, you can understand that there are people out there who will have multiple secrets. But for everyone to have such crazy secrets is mad.
How do they have the time?
How do they have it? Well, Snapchat doesn't take much time, I suppose. But yeah, if I was Leivur, I would not be putting my phone down. And I think a lot of this film, I think...
What excuse would you use, though?
To not join the game?
Yeah.
Well, is there an excuse you can use?
Well, no, exactly. So you're going to... I don't know.
Just have to pray.
I guess you just have to hope that you don't get a text when.
Well, I think
that's happening.
But that's what Runa seems to. See, Runa's like, oh, you can look at my phone whenever you like, and he puts his phone down, and he seems like very open and very happy that nothing will go wrong. And I'd love to feel that way, but. And if this was real, I would feel that way.
Say.
But my excuse to get out of the game would probably just be something like, oh, I've got no battery.
I've got a headache. Bye.
I mean, yeah, it's a bit, it would be a lousy excuse and it wouldn't get me out of the game, basically.
Yeah.
But one flaw I thought to this whole idea is that you should be able to tell whose phone is who. There's no way Leivur and Petter have the same background, although...
Yeah.
They did seem to have generic iPhone backgrounds.
Yeah, you might have like one of those changing backgrounds.
But who uses the generic background?
Those middle-aged Iceland men.
Oh, maybe.
Which I guess what you're referring to is the fact that they swap phones.
Yes.
In an attempt to conceal the fact that Leif is going to get some Snapchat from her.
At 9 o'clock.
At 9 o'clock. So obviously if Petter's there on his own, it doesn't look as bad if he gets the messages.
No, and I guess Leva doesn't know what Pieter's hiding. Yeah. But the whole idea is insane. Like, and Pieter turns him down and he does it on the sly anyway. I must say, I watched this film twice. On my first watch, there was about 10, 15 minutes where I had my heart in my mouth thinking that Leva was Snapchatting with Runa's daughter. And I thought, whoa, that's really dark.
I can't handle that. I mean, there were kind of, I can see why you thought that.
Well, they kept talking about how young she was.
She's older than she looks.
Yeah, and he's, because Pieter asks Leva outright, how old is she? Yeah. And he literally shrugs, I don't know.
That was a bit of a Chekhov's gun that never went off.
Yes.
Like, they did kind of line it up that it was going to be, she was going to be like problematically young.
Mm.
But maybe they meant she's like 25 or whatever, but it just didn't really like land that way.
Maybe.
It did sound like it was going to be worse.
And the only character we know.
Yeah.
Who's featured quite prominently.
Yeah.
And I'm not 100% sure what she
adds
to the film other than to show that Runa is, therapy is working for Runa.
Because
that's his secret. Runa's secret is that he went to therapy and didn't tell his wife.
Well, you think that's his
secret. For the whole film, pretty much, that's his only secret. Yeah. And Björg outs him, and that causes a friction between him and Ava. And Ava, what's her secret?
Her secret? I mean, again, why has she suggested this game? Although I have got a theory here.
Okay.
Her secret is that she's having an affair with her husband's brother.
Thorstein, who's sitting at the table.
Also, like, why him? He's such a rubbish choice of someone to have an affair with. Like, her husband is much more appealing than he is.
For sure.
He's so, like, cringe and like trying to be like young and down with the kids, dating a younger woman. He's
wearing
just embarrassed.
His cap at the dinner
table. He's embarrassing. But again, why would you suggest this game when you had secrets? But I guess she knows he is also at the dinner table, so he's not going to be texting her.
Yeah, their bit should be fairly under wraps here. But
again, all of these things are unfolded in layers, aren't they? Mm-hmm. So we don't get this till much later, which is fun.
It's very funny. Actually, on second view, there are only a few things that subtly point to things, but at the beginning of the film, Ava is admiring her earrings in the mirror.
Really?
Yeah, which we don't, obviously, that means nothing until later on.
Love that.
When it's exposed that he's bought earrings for her.
Yeah, also, rubbish affairing. What?
I think she just needed an outlet from Runa because he wasn't doing it for her.
Yeah. So there's that secret, the secret that Björg's been speaking to her ex, but she is kind of the innocent in all
She's
of this,
She's the
right?
nice character.
Yeah.
These are the rest of them have incredibly
Pieter.
Nasty streaks. Pieter, yeah, okay. Yeah, all right. He's all right. He hasn't done anything to anyone, I suppose.
No.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, innocent and almost naive Björg.
Mm.
She's messaging with her ex.
Mm.
But in a kind way.
Yeah.
She's like, he's after sex.
As it transpires.
Yeah. Relationship advice from your ex. Mm.
But I guess as well, it's interesting because she's kind of put forward as quite an annoying character at the start. She's a bit like, oh, get a grip. Come on. And the other women clearly look down on her a bit as like younger and a bit of an idiot, but she is the one that actually has a good heart in the end.
Well, even like they take the piss out of her for her ideas, but her ideas come from a genuine place of kindness. Like she knows she's getting this inheritance. She's talking about a cat zoo, which is a hilarious concept, but like it's come from a good place.
Mm.
She talks about being an ethical investor, and then she's being the kind person to her ex.
Mm.
It's just like, I think they're just jealous more than anything.
No, I think that they're too cynical and snarky.
Okay.
And think she's an idiot.
I mean, she doesn't say quite as much, but she does basically say, I don't really know what
she
I'm doing with my life.
Yeah, she kind of is an idiot.
But I liked her line about, you know, okay, you whatever you think of me might be true, but I'm going to have a kid. I'm hoping to have a kid. He might solve global warming or something, whatever she says. She understands that she's not going to change the world, but she wants to, if she can. She's a good un.
Sko, ég búin að vera á skvörtinu frá því að ég var bara... sko, mamma, hún gaf mér minn fyrsta vibrátor þegar ég var 12 ára.
No joke.
Björg mín, píkana veistla, skál í boðinu.
Já, það er svo gott.
Það er gott að barna píu alls ekki hringi þig og alls ekki hringi að einu mömmu þetta.
Who was your least favourite character?
Oh, it's such a good question. They're all so vile.
Mm.
I think it was Thorstein. He just has this kind of real homophobic
trait
running the whole time. Like, so as soon as Lever and Pieter switch phones and Lever's getting these calls and messages from Arnthor, who's the captain of the football team, he's like, he's a big fan of the football team, so he's very suspicious because why, you know, I don't think his kids go to your school, etc., etc. But then he just really goes for the kind of jugular with the whole gay thing. Like, he can't unhear it. And okay, it is big news, which is why it hasn't been announced yet, because obviously it's Pieter, who's a coach at the club. But Thorstein's just really fucking homophobic, and I can't, it's hard to look past that at all.
I think it was an interesting portrayal of that kind of dynamic, wasn't there? Because this idea that they were probably all people who in like society would say, yeah, I'm not homophobic, I'm fine with gay people, it's all good, man, don't worry. And then when they're actually confronted with something, they're suddenly... the reality of their prejudices comes to the surface.
Yeah.
And that's what it kind of felt like here, that they were like, you know, I'm fine with it. But actually, I don't want my friend to be gay and have not told me.
Yeah.
And I thought that was quite kind of well shown. And obviously, there was a lot of like really horrible language and prejudice statements in there, which was like uncomfortable to hear, but I think was... you know, important, because I think a lot of people hold those views.
Yeah, and this is the thing. It's like, it felt like they were laying it on thick, because obviously Thorstein is a terrible man. All the others continue down that line of thought about homosexual people as well. And they're talking, like, even Leva's like, oh, I think he must have misinterpreted from the fact that I'm stylish, and like all these horrible stereotypes of what gay people can be. And then even Runa and some of the women, they all start chipping in with these thoughts.
Yeah.
But Thorstein, my God, it's like he's affronted by the fact that, yeah, like you said, one of his oldest friends was naked in a bath with him once. Mm. Like, what difference does it make?
Yeah. So it was quite a kind of canny portrayal of those hidden prejudices.
Yeah. And obviously it's fascinating and horrible for Pieter to just be sat observing this, because...
They're
talking about him without realizing it. And, you know, this is essentially him coming out. But that's not how they would have reacted if he'd just come out and said, I'm gay.
Yeah.
Which is just a horribly fascinating thing to witness. It felt to me too much.
What you mean, unrealistic?
Well, no, not unrealistic, because that would be damning the gay experience of all of this. But, like... it is a big part of the film, but it felt like an even bigger part. And it just felt like, oh, everyone in Iceland is homophobic.
I don't know. I can't comment.
No, we couldn't possibly comment. And I would assume not. But it felt like literally everyone around that table had something against gay people. And I was like, fuck. Basically, like, not necessarily this film is unrealistic. Just, holy shit, this is horrible to witness.
Mm.
So... yeah, my least favourite character is Thorstein for those reasons, but also they're all so vile.
Yeah.
And of all the personality traits, that was obviously the worst one that they all sort of admit to.
Yeah.
But before we move on, I just wanted to talk about this film being really meta in this respect, because obviously homosexuality in sport is still stigmatised to this huge degree. And, you know, people are... gradually coming out, and there's lots of amazing sports stars across the board who have come out and are incredibly well respected and brilliant at their disciplines. But football, for some reason, it's always as a sport held on a pedestal, and there's still, I think there's maybe now one openly gay footballer playing in the upper leagues of the British football leagues. But in Iceland, as far as I know, no footballers come out as gay. But there was this film called 11 Men Out in the that was released in the mid-noughties, starring Bjørn Hlynur Haraldsson, about the captain of KR coming out as gay.
Oh.
Which is mad.
Very specific.
Is this film specifically referencing this? I think it's called Straukanir Oka. I don't know much about that film, so I don't know if it's based on real life or not. But to specifically reference the captain of this football team in a film in which that character is starring,
yeah,
is just incredibly meta.
An Easter egg, maybe?
Yeah, an Easter egg that most people outside of Iceland would have no idea about. But I just, I don't know, I even know how I found that out, to be honest. But yeah, very crazy. Mm. Anyway, that's all my thoughts on Pjetur and Þorsteinn.
Leifur.
Strákar. Þetta er neyðar ástand. Það er að kalla saman stjórnana í Káir. Það er að kalla stjórnana saman bara í kvelli. Við erum Káir. 27 titla sem 1912, það er aldrei að vera homi í Káir.
Það getur ekki verið.
Jú, jú, þetta er alveg rétt. Það var aldrei verið homi í íslenskum fótbolta.
Ha?
Nei, nei.
Það er ekki hægt að leggja þetta á drenginn. Og þetta fer ekki lengra. Er það skilið?
Moving on to different secrets. There is a lot of time, as you say, spent on the kind of Leifur story. It did feel... I thought that Anita Bream did an amazing job and I was like completely like a shapeshifter compared to other stuff we've seen her in. Like, mm-hmm. I completely kind of invested in this drunken character and her chaos, but there was a point at which maybe it felt like we'd hit the ceiling in terms of like intensity, and I was like, where can we go from here? There was like maybe, you know, 20 minutes or whatever where it's like rah, 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 like,
yeah, of,
like screaming chaos, and I wonder if maybe it did peak for a bit too long,
maybe. Yeah, and what specific point is that? The
well, just her kind of performance as a whole. Not as a whole, but in the final sequences. I thought it was very well done, but perhaps was at max capacity.
That's fair. She's dealing with a lot.
She is,
as
yeah.
well.
I mean, and also some people would respond to that situation in that way.
I'm sure they would, yeah. Mm. It's tricky. I mean, it would be tricky to find out that
why
you're...
didn't they all leave? Or, yeah. But also, I mean, this is again suspending disbelief. The many points where, like, quite early on, things were, like, revealed that was, like, not the biggest stuff, but that was awkward or uncomfortable or sad or whatever. And I thought, wouldn't you say, do you know what? The game, maybe we shouldn't. We'll leave the game now. We'll just have a nice dessert.
Yeah, they do suggest that. A couple of them do suggest that a couple of times. But then there's always someone just going, no, we said we were going to play this game.
Yeah.
I can't remember who
I
it is.
I guess because they want to find out if their partner is cheating.
Yeah, I suppose that's
they
the...
They want to catch them in their trap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So much going on.
It's not made me really very excited about moving into middle age and going to dinner parties.
Yeah, because that is what happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
Transition from going out to staying in.
And everyone has affairs and falls out at the dinner party table.
Well, I hope not everyone's having an affair as we move forward in life. But, you know, you haven't got married yet.
Yeah. Well, so my time is yet to come.
Oh, God.
Haldið í alvörun að hann sé.
Hildur mér.
So I guess by the kind of final stage of this film, when everybody's secrets have been revealed, you have Bjorg crying on the floor of the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
You have Thorstein in the kind of back sofa zone, realizing he's ruined his whole life. You have Anita Bream's character, Hildur, shouting and screaming, sloshing wine all over the place.
Blueberry liqueur.
You have all the food kind of demolished in some sense. Leifer sat there, shell-shocked. Pieter decides he's going to leave, very fairly.
I think, yeah, good decision.
And Eva kind of sat thinking, ooh, look at all this carnage I've unleashed.
But I'm okay. Her secret wasn't revealed. Obviously, they've been having the affair. As everyone's leaving, like, it seems like Hildur and Leifur are probably going to break up. Whether it was a man or a woman that he cheated on her with.
I could see them, though, also. Oh, yeah, because she says to him, yeah, we're all going to have to do more work now that we're getting divorced.
Mm.
But I could see them kind of just bitterly staying together.
I,
for logistical reasons.
No, I can see that. I can see it. It's almost like, oh, that was a drunken thing that happened last night. Everyone went a bit crazy. Some secrets were revealed, but life goes on. Mm. And I think I have read in some form, some versions of this film, there's an ending where everyone just goes back to normal, like it never happened, which is interesting.
I could see that.
So those two are on the, basically on the way out, aren't they?
Thorstein and Bjorg.
They're done. He's having a baby with a woman that he doesn't love, who he's literally ridiculed all the way through.
Was her name Margaret?
Her name was Margaret.
Which I feel like in the English context just makes me think of like an old granny.
Yeah, 100% was my nan's name. Yeah. So he's like, okay, he's having a baby, but not in the circumstances he actually would have liked. But he's given a push by his brother into actually going to do the right thing for the first time that day, I guess. And that's it then. And then Runa and Eva are left happily married.
Mm. And so I guess the kind of cyclical bit of this is that at the very start, we get a sense that Eva thinks Runa's having an affair. But obviously, it's turned out seemingly that he isn't. He's just gone to therapy.
Yeah, and he even says as much, doesn't he, right at the end. He's like, oh, because you can always check my phone whenever you like. I thought you might be having an affair. And so, it would be better if you... It's almost like he was saying, it'd be better if you'd had an affair because I've got something I'm hiding and that would make me feel better about it.
So I feel like there's a little sting in the tail because she's... Obviously, we know she's having an affair. So she's now happy that he's not having an affair, but we know that she is. So you're like, ooh, that's a bit sting
in
the
tail.
That's
true. I'm not sure if I even thought about that. In my mind, they were fine. But yeah, you're right. She did have this affair with his brother.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So she's like kind of won this evil battle. Or so you think. So you think, oh, that's a nasty sting in the tail for this peaceful final moment. And then there's a little coda.
Little coda involving the volcano, which has just exploded. Because obviously things come to a head and the volcano erupts and it's like, you know, mirroring.
Metaphor.
Yeah. But yeah, the lads are out on a hike, I guess.
I thought that this coda was about 2 minutes longer than it needed to be. It needed to be like 30 seconds.
Yeah, it was weirdly long.
Yeah. But the takeaway from that coda was that Runa has a secret phone.
Bum, bum, bum.
So he's been having an affair all along. You thought one guy was nice at this table and you were wrong.
You were wrong. But also in that sting, in that little coda, Arnthor and Petter are together and public, which is a nice thing.
But then also, he should have just written off his friends.
But then that comes back to that whole thing of like, you just forget what happened that night almost.
Yeah. But that is, I guess that is literally the word sting really applies here.
What?
But basically it undermines all your belief in the good of humanity at the end.
What do you reckon then? Would you put your phone on the table? Do we really all have that many secrets? I don't know, But what a fun premise and what a brilliantly made film. I reckon it'd work quite well on stage with a rotating cast like 222 or Cabaret are doing in London right now. If that happens, I'll absolutely dash off to Reykjavik to see it. Whatever you thought of Wild Game, let us know on the socials or via email. That's kvikmyndapod@gmail.com. And if you've got any further intel on 11 Men Out, we'd love to hear more about it. And Icelandic football in general. Well, I would anyway. Coming up next week, we throw it back all the way to the 1940s. That's right, we're covering the 2022 film adaptation, A Letter from Helga. If you've been keeping an eye on our socials since New Year, hopefully you managed to catch it on the Roof website before it was removed. If not, tune in anyway, it's bound to get a UK release at some point. See you then. Tack og bless. Thanks and goodbye.